Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 16th of March, recording at 9:10 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is a big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's have a quick review of the week's main highlights. Stock markets, as you know, it was one of pretty much across the board strength, although we do have some little individual small consolidations taking place in Asia, not least in India and China. Now, in the European stock markets, again, they've been full participants in here. And again, I emphasize that, well, I'll come back to these to emphasize a point on Europe, but they've done extremely well. And an increasing number of these indices have pushed up above their highs that they had seen last year. Now, Wall Street's been leading, and driven by Apple, and more on that in a moment. Or I should say Wall Street's been among the leaders, and Apple setting the pace among bigger companies. And they don't get bigger than Apple. Now, a huge story this week has been the significant break in government bond prices, and of course the corresponding spike in yields. I'll come back to that. The US dollar has been generally steady, but it eased in here today against all currencies. For instance, euro is back up to 131.75, sterling back up to 158.44, mostly range bound. Another big story, precious metals. They had resumed their declines, although they're above the, the October and December lows. But some sharp declines in here this week. And those continued for the most part, although before we got some bounces off the lows. Gold is closed out the week here at 1660. Silver at 3256. Crude oil, well, that had been easing a little bit from its highs, but it reversed that today. WTI back above 107, and Brent back above, is it 126 or 127? Let me just confirm, one back above 126. And industrial metals, so they've been quiet, mostly ranging. Greens and beans, looking a bit firm. Not so much rough rice, but soybeans leading corn a bit higher. Those look interesting. Those are the ones that have most caught my eye in here and interest this week. Okay, so what's going on in here overall? Well, again, this has been an absolutely stunning start to the year for stock markets, the best for 10 to 15 years or so, depending on which markets that you're actually looking at. And you don't get a more eloquent testimony to the fact that this is a cyclical bull market than the kind of price performance that we've actually seen. It shouldn't come as a huge surprise. It doesn't to people who've been following the Fuller Money audios and comments of the day, because we had that support building phase following the climactic sell-off in August of last year, And then those lows were tested and in some instances extended a little bit in a support building, in a base building, support building phase. And the rest, you know, October we had very good gains, held just over half of them on the subsequent pullback when things were still volatile. And this year it's been very much a demand-dominated environment overall. So that's extremely good news. Now, a number of people are concerned about this. I mean, I attended a business dinner last night, and I was pleasantly surprised at how cautious people were during the general discussions here. Because they were saying, yes, it's been very good, but I'm looking for a big shakeout. Well, we have been talking about the inevitability of reactions and consolidations, but we've been very pleasantly pleased, pleasantly surprised as well, to see that they have been. And relieved to see that they've been largely rotational so far. Now, that's the way the world used to work in a bull market environment, not that sort of choppy risk on, risk off kind of stuff that we were seeing during the second half of last year. So we've been getting these rotational reactions and consolidations, and that's very good. Now, there are risks, of course. Inevitably, there are risks. There are always risks. And bull markets do climb a wall of worry. Now, what are the legitimate worries? So we can forget Greece. And I mean, Greece will, things will pop up from time to time, but rather than rocking the world, as it appeared to do for a while last year. And that Euroland's problems are going to be more localized, and they will, they have lost the ability to traumatize, I would say, investors beyond a day or two, perhaps. But will we have further problems with Greece? Of course we will. Will we have further problems with Portugal? Of course we will. Will we have unrest and strikes during the hot weather in Europe? Well, I hope not, but I presume so. I presume that we actually will. And don't forget, Greece is going to have relatively cheap financing, pretty well through 2020, thanks to all this generous write downs and all the generous write downs and so on. The European banks have been recapitalized. It's so the shares in Europe, and Europe had taken a beating last year, as you know, but a lot of these shares are staging nice steady comebacks, and some of them offer some quite attractive yields. And as a matter of fact, there are enough good attractive yielding shares around to encourage investors. The pharmaceutical sector, for instance, worldwide, it strikes me as extremely attractive. It's been an underperformer for the most part, but you get nice chunky yields, and those shares are starting to come into form once again. And I think that's the time to time to participate. We have to be a little careful about favorites that get overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages. That's happened to a number of the autonomies, and we've also seen a number of them come back and consolidate those gains. I mean, if you want to see what that looks like, have a look at Coca-Cola, for example. That's a classic example. And a more volatile one of the autonomies in the energy sector, Royal Dutch Shell, which has a great yield, I prefer to buy it when the yield's over 5%, but it's a 4.79 here right now, having seen some mean reversion towards its 200-day overall. So there are a lot of things, if we look around, that that are quite attractive. But if I nominated any one sector for conservative potential here, or for conservative portfolios, it would be, and where we may well see some improved relative performances, is I would pick the pharmaceuticals. What about Apple? Well, it's been absolutely phenomenal. And we've also seen, it's been so phenomenal that we've seen a lot of acceleration. Now, people quickly come back and say, well, the share is still cheap. And on a basis of its multiple and earnings projections, I would agree with that. But, this is an intensely competitive industry. And Apple, I've described it slightly tongue in cheek as being the new gold in investors' eyes. I mean, there are plenty of Apple worshippers out there. Their ranks have grown and grown and grown. And then you have all the ETFs, which have been piling in to push the thing up because of its weighting increasing. Its weighting is over 4%, 4.1% of the S&P. So imagine what the weighting is in the NASDAQ index. It's huge. And it's become obviously very much of a bellwether. And Apple has risen this year from $400 to touch $600 this week. So when you get that type of move, and veteran subscribers who use charts, well, you all use charts, don't you? But you think back in these bull cycles, and have you ever seen any market other than a takeover? And I don't think Apple's going to be taken over. Have you ever seen any market that went into a parabolic acceleration? And those can be, if you're lucky, and occasionally some of those will be astonishingly strong. You don't know how far it's going to go, because it becomes a bit of a mania. But when it stops, then we get a very big correction. And big enough so they usually come down even faster than they go up. So that's the short to medium term risk with Apple. I'm not talking about where it's going to be 5 or 10 years down the road from now, but to see Apple at least return to the MA is a probability rather than a possibility. Now, if you're happy to live through that as a long-term bull of the share for whatever additional reasons, then fine. If not, you might want to have a trailing stop in the share. But having seen it touch 600, I would wager that we will see it meaningfully below that level at some stage in the next few months. Probably not all the way back down to 400, but could it go back to 500? Well, I think that's quite possible overall. Now, that will have implications for Wall Street because it'll start to drag down those indices in another reaction and consolidation. And if they become even more overextended beforehand, because Apple, pick your number, people have been saying 700. Well, if it does that before all this sets in, then we'll get a full-blown correction when it starts to come down. But I think very much a correction within an overall bull market, which is fueled by accommodative monetary policy. That's very important. The growth prospects are better than people, recovery and growth prospects are better than most people dared to hope at year end. Remember how bearish people were at year end? Seems like ages, ages ago. So we have that factor. The valuations, there are still some quite attractive valuations around, although, you know, markets are not dirt cheap. Well, some are. I think on a price to book, Japan is still very cheap, not on a multiple basis. And I think Japan is a great case in terms of being an outperformer here overall. Although, as some subscribers have pointed out, and we pointed out, you do give some of that back in the weaker yen, which has coincided with those good performances of Japan. But you weigh it all up here, this is still a favorable period for stock markets. There has been plenty of cash on the sidelines. Now, obviously, some of that has come back into the market this year. But I think there's still, there's no shortage of cash here still that could come into the stock market. And a new source of that cash is the bust in the bond market that we've seen. And I do think that some of that money that's coming out of bonds will definitely go into the stock market. I don't think it's going to sit in deposit accounts for all that long. So technically, this cyclical bull shows no signs of being over. All it does is, like every bull market, get somewhat overextended from time to time. But as I said before, we're getting these rotational reactions overall. Now, what about this bond bust? Well, I think I would certainly give the benefit of the doubt to the hypothesis that we've seen the peaks here for these bond price futures, and they ranged in forming these ranged mostly fairly quietly, forming these top formations. And therefore, the flip side of that is that the lows are in. And the, to use an overused, very dramatic adjective, but I'll still use it, the Armageddon buyers are, you know, taking some profits. And I think this 30-year plus bull market is over. Now, will we see enough deflationary pressures? And, you know, as I've so often mentioned, we don't live in a black-white world where it's either all deflation or all inflation. We get pockets of both. See, there's still plenty of deflation in wages. There's plenty of inflation in food prices, or the prices of most foods, and in a number of services. But I won't go on and list them all. You know, I think exactly what I'm talking about. But the interesting question is whether do deflationary fears, are they strong enough to keep these bond yields from going up very much? Well, we're about to find out on this. The answer has to be, and I can't be more precise in this, the answer has to be possibly, but I certainly wouldn't bet on that. And given the size of the bull market, and the historic lowness of the yields and the supply involved, and so on, yields could move up more quickly than people expect. That's always the case when when you get these big pivotal turns here. So that's going to provide more short sale opportunities. That's not without its own risks at this time, because of course you lose the yield if you're shorting the futures, or sorry, the yield's working against you. That's why I have a preference for the JGBs overall, though I'm out of them at the at the moment, with sell orders over. And then there's another risk that will Bernanke extend Operation Twist, and whereby he's been rolling his 2-year bonds into the longer dated issues just to keep those rates down. I think Bernanke will definitely want to keep rates down, so we'll see. But he's not going to have it all his own way. As had been the case really for quite a while. So interesting opportunities here in bond markets. Now I just want to go back just a moment here on one stock market and talk about Japan just a little bit more. I think you've pretty much know my views, but I think you've got almost a perfect conjunction here. You've got the weak yen that we were actually looking for. You've got the certainly the attractive valuations. Nobody owned it prior to this year. And will some of those Japanese investors come out of the JGBs now that those Japanese bonds appear to have peaked in prices or bottomed in yields? I think so. And therefore, we are likely to see what has been a rare occurrence, really, since the bubble burst way back in 1989, 1990, is a better than average performance by Japan, Japanese equities. Okay, but time is short. Let me move on. I've covered bonds. I'll just say quickly on currencies, I think we're mostly going to get ranging. I think it's be a period of relative stability rather than dramatic lurches in the currency markets more often than not. And that's a good, that's a stabilizing influence. Now, precious metals. Again, some of the Armageddon buyers or discounters, hedge against disaster, those people, some of those people are coming out of gold and silver. And we could see a little bit more of that. I don't think that there's a huge downside risk. We may not even test the October and December lows, but that's not a forecast because I just don't know. Could we test those lows? Yes. Could we find support above them, or are we going to go below? I really don't know. But what I do know, and you know, is that we are still in this medium-term corrective phase. And what I also know, and you know, from looking at the charts of gold over the last 10, 12 years, is that when it has become quite overextended, it's bigger consolidations, corrections and consolidations, I should say, have lasted approximately 18 months. Well, we're in the seventh month. So I'll always take my cues from the charts here, but until I start seeing a progression of higher reaction lows for both gold and silver, I will be cautious about the timing of a resumption of this secular bull market. I mean, I wouldn't be at all surprised if it didn't happen this year, but I'll let the charts show me. And how to play it? Well, I think people who want to have a proportion of their money in gold and are holding bullion, and they're not leveraged, in other words, if they're happy to ride out another correction as they have before, fine. The futures trading, however, will be quite tricky. And if you do indulge in that, only by following the sharper declines and take your profits promptly on a rally, would be my suggestion, until we see that progression of higher reaction lows, which is not yet in place. If anybody has all of their money in gold, I would suggest that's a misallocation, and that one really ought to have some funds in these stock markets. And I certainly wouldn't want to have all my money in bonds. I wouldn't have any of these low yielding government bonds at this stage. If you have some high yielding corporate bonds, I mean, fair enough. If you have some long dated government bonds and for the growth economies, fair enough. And among the wall of worry items, crude oil. Now that's going to be a problem from time to time, as you know. Incidentally, I've got Ronald Peter Stefurly's report, his latest blockbuster, and his reports are as good as anything in the industry. This really is one to hunker down and read all the way through it. I haven't done that yet, but everything that I've read is interesting. There's a fabulous section on shale gas, and I'm not talking about just rehashing things that we already know, because we know a lot if you've been following this industry, as we have, following it with us. But he's talking about the potential for clean fracking and the development of cleaner fracking techniques. Well, technologically, this was always likely, and is highly desirable that the industry should be concentrating on that. But this is such a big field that I think the majors are quite happy to pour money into the development of ways to improve this, just in their own interests. We all have an interest in husbanding the planet, to use that rather old-fashioned sounding term, but you know what I mean, looking after the planet. We also need that energy. But a fabulous, fabulous report. I do recommend it to you. Now, we haven't seen too much, other than the price of crude, we haven't seen too much in the way of commodity price inflation here recently. I think we may get, I think we will get firmer prices in this grain and bean complex. Corn looks interesting. Soybeans is interesting, although that's run a bit. Wheat looks, but corn and wheat, they've been building support, and it looks to me like they're going to be moving up in here. And on that note, I'll do the rest of my work for this evening. But beforehand, wish you all the very best. Have a fabulous weekend.